This is a production of Cornell University.
Everyone, it's officially 4:48. We're starting the student assembly meeting. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Call it. Yes, ma'am. President.
Unexcused. Here. He's coming late.
We'll be right down.
Kay is excused. Lee is excused. Miller, is he here? Unexcused.
Here.
Is he here? Unexcused.
Here.
Yes.
Yes.
Here.
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 Raffaret is unexcused.
Here.
That's it. Okay, great. So the first order of business is approval of the February 2nd, 2012 meeting minutes. Are there any motions on the minutes? There's been a call to question. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? There's been a call for acclamation, seeing no dissent. The February 2nd, 2012 meeting minutes have been approved. Moving on to open microphone. Is there anyone in the audience? No, you're a representative. Is there anyone in the audience who is not on the agenda that would like to speak? All right, before we move into our announcements and reports, I'd just like to welcome WVBR. They will be live streaming every single SA meeting from now on, and this is kind of their test run. We're going to be opening up the, question and answer for WVBR about an hour before each SA meeting, so open microphones potentially will have people that weren't able to come to our physical meeting ask those questions, and we can respond. Yes. You guys, yes, Drew. Okay, great. So we have a special speaker today, Dr. Renee Alexander. She's going to be our second person in the speakers that we will be inviting every week to our SA meetings from now on. Just a bit of, tidying up the essay. All these resolutions need to be discussed. So please, good, bad, positive or negative criticisms on our resolutions, we need to have healthy discussions on them. Our agendas are going to be a lot shorter than they were in the fall semester. So I would like us to discuss every single resolution. Please, if you have any initiatives, put it into resolution form. Talk to the executive board. Come to executive meetings. They're at 9 o'clock in Willard Stray Hall. So our first announcement is a library update by Emily Cusick.
So if you don't know me, I'm Emily Cusick. I've been the library representative to both the faculty library committee and the student library committee for the whole year, but I haven't been around last semester because I wasn't on the listserv, really, but now I am, so I have lots of fun library announcements for you. So from the Student Library Council, as you probably all know, if you're an ILR hotel or have been in the Johnson School, there's consolidation between the ILR, JGSM, and Nestle Library. All the physical collections, the books, the journals are going into the ILR Library. And the Nestle Library is becoming the Marriott Center for, I guess it's like hotel learning or something. I'm not sure. I'm an ILR. So right now there's an initiative going on where they're actually going to be figuring out the use of that space. So within the next couple of weeks, they're looking for student input in that, so you can come talk to me or send me an email. My email address is dgc43 if you're interested on maybe repurposing that space. I'm not sure who the hotelers are. I think it's Steve and Emily. So if you have any comments on that, I'd be happy to relay those to you. Also, along that line with the consolidations, the physical sciences and engineering libraries all of their physical collections are being pushed off campus, and they're becoming virtual libraries where you can look up journal articles and stuff online. And if anyone has any feedback on that, so far it's been overwhelmingly positive because not a lot of engineering and mathematics students use the physical text anymore. They use online resources. They look for journal articles and get most of their resources that way. But if there's a journal that you're missing, or if you use a library space and think that it could be repurposed as well another way, again, please reach out to me either after I'm done speaking or through email. But that's going really smoothly. That's been about a year in process, and it's being in the final stages of implementation, and it's almost done. So in other news, there's a new way to get articles online. I don't know if you guys go to the library homepage a lot. I do, but that's because I'm a nerd and love libraries. But there's this new thing called Summon, which directly brings up the article in the search engine. Instead of going through and pressing, like, get it now, I can hold on.
No, keep going.
Okay, so there's a way to get the library, like, to get the resources. And so be on the lookout for that. It was implemented in a beta test run in the fall, and is now being implemented fully. It's called Summit. I'm not sure what it's about, but there's a web address that can tell you more about it. It's library.cornell.edu/summon. So it tells you more about the system. I honestly don't see how it's changed that much, but maybe it's because I was using the beta version this fall. Probably not, because I'm not that tech savvy, but it's apparently better. On the faculty side, there's a couple more updates. There are some new library considerations for the New York Tech campus. So there is not going to be, right now the libraries aren't so much a priority, obviously, because they're just trying to figure out the logistics of how everything is going. However, there doesn't seem to be like any physical collections that will be down there, but there is going to be a need for study space for graduate students, group collaborative space, like kind of like learning labs a la the new Marriott Center in the hotel school. So that's in the process of being, this virtual library is in the process of being set up. And as more students go down and take on the Roosevelt Island campus, it's going to become an actual thing. So that's something to look forward to. And I know that I will be having more discussion on that within the next semester. And finally, there's a general campaign for collections for the library that's going on from the faculty side, and it just means that we're trying to raise a lot of money to keep the collections budget up because there's been giant cuts. Library's been hit really hard, and unfortunately, collections have been hit. So staff, there's a lot of staff cuts, but there's also collection cuts. And the strength of the library comes from the information that's in the library, the collections themselves. So expect to see a lot of fundraising all over for that. So.
Great. Thank you for the updates, Emily. And just to give Emily a shout-out, she was freshman rep 4 years ago. So it's always nice to see you back at the student assembly. Yes, okay. Enough slow clapping, but we can start another slow clap if you would like for Dr. Renee Alexander. She's the associate. All right. She's the Associate Dean of Students and the Director of Intercultural Programs. 626 was basically her vision. It's been successful ever since. She's going to give us about a 15 to 20 minute, introduction, a 5 to 10 second introduction, however you see fit. And then you have about 15 to 30 minutes to do with the assembly what you like. So
really?
With that, yes.
Let me start by saying welcome. This building has a lot of different looks, and I'm seeing a look that we haven't seen in this building before. So I'm a Cornellian. 15 minutes is a lot. Okay.
You don't have to do 15 minutes. I can do a longer intro if you like.
May I stand?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be that long.
I am a Cornellian, and so I got back to Cornell about 6 years ago to work for the university. I came in through Alumni Affairs and Development, and now I'm on the side of the house that I belong in because my background is on the student affairs side. So we moved into this building in September of last year. I worked in this building when I was in Alumni Affairs. In fact, my office used to be right here. I was in this office for 4 years. Then we moved downtown to Seneca Place, the Starbucks building, and I was lucky to move back with a different set of responsibilities, that is working in the student affairs side of the house. So what goes on here And why is it important to the work that you guys are doing? Like I said, this used to be alumni affairs. Alumni affairs moves out. Student affairs, student and academic services gets the bid to repurpose this property, and we spent about $1.3 million shoring up the house because it was sagging and needed a lot of work. So this is now a student activities space, and it largely belongs to students. What are we trying to do here? There are several program areas here. The LGBT Resource Center is on the third floor. The Alumni Student Mentoring Program is also on the third floor, and we've got some changes planned for that program that you'll be hearing more about. We're going to launch some peer-to-peer mentoring programs on campus as early as this fall, and you may have heard of SWAG, the acronym for Scholars Working Ambitiously to Graduate. If all goes well, SWAG will be in the portfolio of this building and will be emanating from this space. Okay. Downstairs on the ground floor is the Asian American Center. I don't think any of you were on the SA when, no, you were probably not here yet, but it was several years in the making, but we got the money to launch a real Asian American Center that is downstairs. Student Development Diversity Initiatives is the concept that I'm working on, and that is designed to provide support for students of color outside the classroom, but not limited to students of color. And why do I say that? Because as important as the student experience is to each student feeling comfortable in his or her own group, we're trying to build some bridges now across different racial, ethnic, cultural, socioeconomic, geographic differences that I don't want to say divide students, but students often feel comfortable in their groups, and it is not always the easiest thing to reach out and develop relationships beyond the groups that you find yourselves being comfortable in. So what I've been charged to do here, you're going to hear a lot about it, and I'm looking, of all the things that I just rattled off and all the things that we do around here, student support, building programming, the stuff that I'm really the most excited about. I sound like a broken record to some of you, but there is an intercultural program concept that's going on here that is designed to build relationships across difference on this campus. We have all the perfect elements and components to make this happen. Demographically, Cornell is more diverse than it has ever been, and the data is just compelling when you look at it. So now that we have this wonderful composition of students here, how do students work and interact with each other across difference? So I look around this room, it's just pretty diverse in here. But I argue that SA is probably at the forefront of this. And so we are looking for student leaders. And I've gotten a few people on board. Okay, I got the Jeffries here. I got the Gitlin guys here. I got your president here. I got Nico and others in this room. Can I call you Nico, by the
way?
You can
call me Johnny.
I like that.
We're
close. But it's hard work. And I'll give you a very recent example. There was an article in the, an op-ed piece in the Daily Sun last week about Program House. Program House Problems, it was called. So maybe some of you have read my response to that, and I laid out a very clear and explicit response to Program House Problems, which I will call Program Houses Affirmed. But I went out of my way to dismantle some of the arguments against the Program House. But why is this important? Because this issue of students living in themed homes bubbles up every now and then, and it tends to make the people living in these houses feel very uncomfortable. It makes them feel on the defensive. And so I thought that I would step up a couple of days ago and put out a defense of students living in program houses. But the larger or the deeper issue is there are people that look at these homes where you have a culturally, and I say culturally themed house, like Aguego or the Latino Living Center or Ujamaa. But we have students who don't think that these houses should exist because students self-segregate, and they use this language that I think is offensive and inappropriate. So my solution to this, is my suggestion to a body like this is, let's talk about it. Let's work on breaking down some of these barriers. And we do that not by writing an article, throwing rocks at people, but by talking about these issues and creating forums where we can have healthy, often tension-filled, but conversations that move us forward as a community. And so that's what I'm really focused on working on here. So this building is known as the Intercultural Center. We're doing intercultural work here, and it's tough work. But if you move forward with us on this, we are going to shape the legacy of Cornell University. Okay? The time is now. The elements, the components are all right here on the table. Demographically, like I said, it is compelling to see the shift, the seismic shift in the composition of this university. And when I was here, decades ago, what I'm talking about now would have been impossible to move forward. So you are the leaders. And I'm not just hyping you up, okay? You are the leaders that can help us move forward to build a Cornell that really honestly and truly brings people together. So that's what we're working on here, okay? I need support. I need ideas. I need input, and I need leadership from the folks that are sitting around this table. So that's why I'm here, and I hope that I present a compelling case to you today. Okay? I'm going to stop. Any questions?
Yes. So we'll do the slow clap at the end, but we'll start taking questions for Renee. So first on the speakers list is Representative Gitlin.
I know we've spoken about how like I can get involved, but for all the other representatives, can you just speak about how they could more directly get involved and what's tangible for them to do?
I don't have a concrete answer for that yet, Ross, Representative Gitlin. thank you for asking that. And so what they can do right now, this is the concrete answer. What you can do right now is sign up to get on board with this. We are slowly moving, making some progress. And I'll give you an example. There's a group that meets. In fact, we had a meeting here last Monday. And the acronym we're probably going to work on, it's called STUCK. But it stands for Students to Unite Cornell. All right? And it's a group of students who really want to, who see the potential of what we can do here on this campus. And they want to move this forward. But as we looked around that room, this room last Monday, there weren't very many people in the room that looked like some of you, which are Caucasian. It was a room full of students of color who are saying, yeah, we want to engage the entire university. Yeah, we want to move this forward. But in order to do this, we really need everybody represented. Okay, and not a bunch of students of color who want to see this happen. In my response to the program house problems of last week, I happened to put out some data about the demographics, the background that most of you come from. 50% of students of color on this campus, 50% of underrepresented minorities and students of color have attended mostly or completely white high schools, but 80% of white students have attended mostly or completely white high schools as well. About 40% of underrepresented minorities and students of color, meaning Asians, roughly 40% grew up in neighborhoods. 40% of students of color have grown up in mostly or completely white neighborhoods, but 90% of white students have grown up in mostly or completely white communities. And so when you take a look at that, when you process those demographics, largely Caucasian students are coming here with not a lot of exposure to students of color. Are there exceptions? Of course there are. So, but the flip side of that is the students of color are the ones that are coming with more interaction in diverse populations. So how do we get the majority? And the majority is no longer the majority. We have no majorities on this campus anymore. We have a plurality. About 41% of incoming first-year students identify as being white Caucasian. It's about 8 or 9% of our students don't identify with anything. And we could argue that there are some students who check no box. But let's say 45% of incoming first-year students are white Caucasian. All right, so there's no imagine what the graph looks like from 1960. It's just a slow decline. But what has happened? That means all other population groups have risen in terms of numbers. So it really makes for an exciting and dynamic mix on campus. But how are people, like I said, interacting? So if you have a room full of Black and Asian and Latino and Muslim and Native kids sitting around talking about diversity, there's a vacuum. And we need leaders from all communities to help us move forward with building, like I said, inclusive communities where people share, get to know, learn more about each other. And that means discounting and dispelling biases and unconscious assumptions that we all have about people that are different from us. This is work that creates tension, but it can be healthy, positive tension as we move forward. So my short answer, Ross Gitlin, is we can identify people that want to move forward with this and get some brainstorming going on, okay, to talk about just what can this look like. We have free range to do this. And we can, like I said, build a legacy. But we need ideas, we need input, we need people that look like you around discussing this and moving this concept forward.
Just as a follow-up question real quick.
Yeah, sure.
How do you define, like, white high school?
A white high school, which is the majority, demographically, the majority of the students identify as being Caucasian or white. Okay? And the data is really interesting. We get this data from the freshman survey that I hope most of you did coming in. You probably hadn't figured out that you didn't have to do it at that point. But these are students self-reporting. All right, and the data is rich, and I mean the good news is that we have students who may be coming from these very majority settings, but they want to come here to experience and explore difference, and that is key. That is critical. Okay.
And anyone in the audience can also ask Renee a question, so just raise your hand. Next on the speakers list is Representative Trefison.
All right. Sorry. Well, I just wanted to first thank you for letting us have our meeting here and really being an anchor for outreach for the student assembly for this entire past semester, making this a center of that. Just wanted to start with that. Last week at our meeting, Susan Murphy brought up a diversity plan, a university-wide diversity plan. And I was just wondering what your role was in it, where you see it going, and what changes you expect.
I sit on the University Diversity Council, which has become a streamlined committee of five professionals who are guiding the overall university diversity initiative. In years gone past, the committee looked like this, and of course not a lot got done, so we narrowed it down, we filtered it down to three, and now there are five people on the committee. And so what we are charged with is developing a diversity initiative that offers every component of this university, every division of this university, will have a menu of items that they can choose from to work on with regard to the diversity objectives that they need to be accomplishing. So the Student Academic Services will have choices as to what they want to work on first. Now, I'm not quite sure what the Vice President has identified as the issues that we need to work on first. So I can speak to you conceptually, okay, and then we can filter it down. I'm actually a good person to bring back, okay, because I got the inside scoop, but I don't have a lot to talk about now. In about four or five, at your last meeting, I'll be able to really, really fill you in on where we're going with this. What's different about this is that this diversity initiative has teeth. What does that mean? In higher education, you can get people together for committee meetings, and they talk and talk and talk, and nothing gets done. But we are going to move this initiative forward because it has the buy-in of the people who are most likely to get this done, the provost, and I even say his name before the president, the provost, who is the chief operating officer of the university, got a lot of power. He controls the $2 billion budget that runs this university. So there are accountability measures that will be built into this diversity initiative. And there will be incentives and there will be consequences if you don't follow, if you don't buy into and implement and execute the menu options of your choice. So the provost and the president have the bully pulpit and the carrots and the sticks by which we will enforce this diversity. So I know this sounds a little vague right now, but I can tell you that as not a skeptic, but as a realist when it comes to these things, I'm actually very excited about this. So I will thank you for that question. I will come back and answer that question in greater detail in May as we are winding down.
Great. And you are officially on our agenda for the last meeting of the
semester. Wow.
Yep. Clear voice. Next on the speakers list is Representative Brown.
Hi. Nice to see you. I just had some ideas on the topic of making this campus more diverse. And just from the statistics from my personal experience of being a college student on the community, I feel like it has to be an initiative of upper class working to facilitate something for freshmen and incoming students. Because I feel as if just looking at those statistics, when you have 90%. The 90% statistics versus the 40% statistics of students who have been somewhat accustomed to going to a more diverse school who are African American and less diverse schools who are white. When you start from having the upper class kind of create this new culture so that incoming freshmen can kind of see this culture coming in, it makes it so they don't become so. They don't conform to a certain group or to this notion that diversity is somewhat, I guess, not really limited, but it definitely allows for them to expand and feel comfortable expanding into other different groups of individuals. So do you have any ideas on how we can incorporate this during orientation or before?
What is your first name?
Dara Brown.
Dara? Thank you for putting that on the table. Our proximity to the first year village up here has me thinking around this topic. Every year we do Tapestry of Possibilities. Y'all remember Tapestry? Okay. I moderate Tapestry, and I'm always really energized when I see first year students responding to the content of Tapestry. And they've got all these wonderful comments and questions, and then they trot off, and there is no more diversity training, connecting going on in the first year residence halls beyond that. So we are working on a proposal right now that continues peer education around certain topics, race and ethnicity, gender and sexual orientation, faith and religion, health, well-being. And there's another that we would like to implement for first-year students in these residence halls right here. And so the concept would be to, and this is just one idea, to, and this is for anyone that wanted to participate or sit in the residence halls, would be to take these student-facilitated, whatever it's going to look like, whatever the product is going to look like, into the first-year residence halls to continue the discussion and to continue the issue of keeping diversity initiatives on the front burner for first-year students. I keep saying, Dara, that as I work with students and try to sell this concept of what I've just put out to you, is that I want leaders and upperclassmen involved in this, student leaders, people that influence the thinking of others on this campus, and that's why you guys are sitting on this body, because you have the power to influence people who are your constituents. So, the buy-in from upperclassmen, and I'm going to use a political phrase without politicizing this, George Bush, who didn't have a lot to say that I really agreed with, did have a couple of expressions, and one was during the Iraq War, a coalition of the willing. Okay, so I'm trying to put together a coalition of the willing around this to get, like I said, the people influencers involved to take this message to, and in this case, first-year students. As you know, you're not that far removed from the first-year experience, is that Relationships form. I'm in Appel and RPCC on a regular basis. I see people walking and talking. I see people of different racial groups and ethnicities talking amongst each other. So I'm wondering, gee, what's going on inside the residence hall in the first year experience? And how does that continue when people begin to move off, move into the Greek House system, move into West Campus? Are these relationships continued? What else can we do, particularly in the first year areas, to keep this issue moving forward and keep making progress? So, thank you very much. And you'll be hearing, I wrote your name down, Dara, so you'll be hearing from me.
Next on the speaker's list is Vice President of Finance, Nicoletti. Nico.
In the house.
So I use the term majority students, and obviously, you know, everyone belongs to their certain affinity group, either religiously or their sexual orientation, but, you know, let's just use that term majority. I feel that on campus, in the last few years that I've been here, that conversations of race and ethnicity tend to be very harsh and tend to not be very welcoming to those who aren't comfortable talking about those issues. And I feel like in order to continue to have a discussion about those issues on campus, which is important, and if we want to continue to foster diversity, I guess how will you take into account this harsh atmosphere on campus for majority students to talk about this, especially if we want to get them involved in the conversation? And, you know, kind of move forward with that, and kind of how will you take that into account and maybe even start to ameliorate that situation on campus? And I know we've talked about this in the past, too.
I think that, and thank you again for that question, because these can be very difficult issues to talk about. However, while race and ethnicity may be one of the topics, it certainly is not limited to that. I think one of it's the most obvious when it comes to differences in people, but I think one of the strongest undercurrents running across this campus is socioeconomic differences, and that has very little to do with race. Okay, students are very, and let me just focus on students of color. Underrepresented minority students are very heterogeneous these days. And a generation ago, when a black student or a Latino student walked in your office, you could make certain assumptions about them, but you can't do that anymore, because we have legacy students, we have the children of doctors and lawyers, who may have more in common with upper crust Cornellians from a socioeconomic standpoint. We have white rural, low-income students that attend Cornell who are often don't feel comfortable. You probably are not as in tune with them, but certainly working with students, this issue comes up over and over and over again. So these are all barriers, I think. These are all issues that are difficult to talk about, Adam, but we have to start small, okay? And I believe in piloting programs and starting small and claiming some success. You've got to get some people in the room who are willing to do this. And again, they have to be a diverse group that look like you guys. But there is tension in these topics, and we're not going to win converts overnight amongst everybody, but I think we have to start someplace. And again, there have to be certain controls. There have to be certain people in the room to help conversations like this. But they also don't have to be direct confrontational discussions around this. There are other ways to approach these topics. That's why I think work that ordinary people does can be very, very helpful in broaching topics that can be very difficult to discuss. And we need some advice and consultation around this. So did I answer that appropriately?
Yeah, I think so. And okay. You know, I know that that we've discussed in the past, mm-hmm. but obviously baby steps towards that.
No question. You're not going to convert everybody or get everybody in the room at the same time.
And obviously, I think it's a national issue as well, not just the Cornell issue.
There's no question about it. Thank you. Thank you.
So you had your hand up. If you could just say your first and last name, your year.
Mose Cho. I'm a freshman. Being one, I guess you would call it, being Asian, I'm from a all-white community from Cheyenne, Wyoming. I was the only Asian in my high school, as well as probably majority of my state, and we never saw another Asian there. coming to Cornell was a big culture shock for me because there was other non-white people there. And one of the things that I think as a freshman in general, search for acceptance and whatnot, I felt more comfortable joining clubs that particularly targeted Asians, I guess. Like I joined, I'm very religious, so I joined church for like Korean people. I joined Chinese Bible studies, I joined, other Asian type clubs. And for some reason, just Asian people tend to gravitate towards each other, or at least in my case. And I feel more comfortable in that way. And my concern is if, initiatives would be taking and there would be, diversity clubs, who's to say that I would choose these diversity clubs over, a club of just Korean people or whatnot,
What's your first name again?
Mosey.
Mosey, spell that for me, Mosey.
M-O-S-E-H.
Okay. Last name?
Shafi.
Okay. You're now on my list too, Mosey. What I envision here is not a club, but gatherings scheduled throughout the semester where students can get together and talk about issues or whatever it is that we're going to, whatever the content or the format is going forward. And so why would you want to do this if you have enough activities and you're busy in other areas and you are hanging out with your Asian friends, which I understand? Why? Because if something is happening that you feel is compelling and important enough to be at, you're going to be there. And there are movements that get started and people get on board because they realize that it is important and momentum gets going and people want to be a part of it. And that's why you would want to participate in something like this at some point. With regard to people wanting to be around people that look like them, and thank you for sharing your story because you are a wonderful example of that demographic that I threw out. And so here you are, an Asian kid in Wyoming. I've never been there, but I would think it's pretty white. Okay, I'm sure there's some diversity in the pockets of the state. But here you come to Cornell, and now you are introduced and exposed to other Asian American students. And so you are going through the process of racial identity development. Okay, that can happen along the 4 years here. You could go through Cornell and not deal with any Asian students, but that light bulb goes off 2 years after you get out of Cornell. So you have the space here now to connect with and interact with people that look like you, and you didn't have that experience before. And that is something that you should want to experience and embrace. But that does not preclude the fact that you can't interact with others and find interest with others or come together to learn more about others that are different from you. Because you're going to get out in this world and you're going to be in settings with people who are going to be different from you for the rest of your life as we move more deeply into this globalized world of ours. And that, in fact, is a priority for the president, is to make Cornell a more globalized university. And you see that happening. So, to reiterate, I think this is something that you will want to get on board with at some point. If you are a intellectually stimulated, a person who considers himself or herself progressive, and wants to be around like-minded people and learn how to embrace change in a very rapidly changing world. And what better incubator and what better place of experimentation to do it right here, right now. And be a part of building something, like I said, that's going to leave a legacy of Cornell.
So I'm not sure how much time you have left, but we still have a couple more speakers.
That'll be fine.
All right. So next on the speakers list is Representative Scalfa.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for coming here. And,
sure.
I'm sure the Assembly is calling me a broken record right now. And I love what you're doing. This is such a wonderful program and everything that you're doing. I don't even know what word to use to describe it because it's so unique. I just want to know if you are including the students with disabilities population, because I know we have such a great minority here at Cornell. It's almost as if everybody is Cornell. You know, it creates such a unique community, and I feel like we need to push for more students with disabilities so that people learn how to interact properly with everybody that they encounter in their life.
What's your first name?
Peter.
Peter. Peter, I've been around long enough to see the diversity initiative grow and expand to include more and more cohorts of people. And so as time has gone on, the diversity movement has become a part of this. And to answer your question, this cohort should absolutely and unequivocally be a part of this movement. We are starting small here, and that's not to exclude the disability community. They are actually a part of where we are going and what we want to do, and we have members of the disability community who are already part of this movement. We have been in business here for 5 long months, and when I describe what we're trying to do here, I hearken it to the Wild Wild West, because it's kind of run and gun right now. But we have an idea. We have goals, but it's like an amoeba. It's moving and it's taking shape. And so while we can't reach out and include everybody to the numbers and to the extent that we want to right now, we will be moving in this direction. And so, Peter, spell your last name for me.
S-C-E-L-S-O.
S-C-E-L-S-O. Got it.
She also has a music video out where she spelled out his last name.
Okay.
That's why I wrote last name.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure to check it out. Can I see that on YouTube?
Yes.
Last
on our speakers list is Representative Adam Wolford.
Hi. I know you talked about holding events in order to get people more, like, as far as, like, cross cultures, get them more intertwined. And I was just thinking, like, as far as the size of the event, were you going for a bigger event or a smaller event? Because I think about it, like, I know you mentioned something in the residential dorms, but, like, that makes more sense to me because in an intimate location, I feel like it's easier to interact with someone, but at a big event, I don't really know what you're thinking, but at a big event, it seems almost intimidating.
What we'd like to do in the residential houses here is to build programming that we take in so that students can engage in this after Tapestry, after that excitement and enthusiasm that we see, and students can opt in or opt out. In the short term, Adam, what I would like to think that we can do is to get small groups of students together to begin conversations like this. Okay? We don't have a lot of money to do this, but I'm not one that worries about money. We can put our hands on the money. Again, when you build something successful, the money shows up here. All right? So, again, we're open to ideas and input, but getting students together to talk around certain themes on the outset is something that I think that we can do, and manage emotions and manage tension, but go beyond the superficial. And I'm not talking to have people sitting around a table going at each other, and there are themes that we can talk about, have people present, engage in conversation, and this is just the beginning, Adam. It's just the beginning. And so I just wrote your name down because everyone who had a question for me, I'm going to have some questions for you.
So speaking of questions for each other, I think this is a bit different than most of the presentations that we had, and we're in 626, which is a very intimate building. So I'd like to open up to anyone in the audience that has questions for the Student Assembly, just wants to talk to us about different issues, initiatives that you have. I know, Sasha, you mentioned you wanted to speak to us, so you have the floor.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Sasha Mack. And I think just to go off of, you know, the overall idea of what Renee is saying and why even come to the essay about addressing diversity issues and making it a campus-wide, everyone here has connections to different organizations on campus. And I think as student leaders, and kind of going off what Dara was saying, is you lead by example. So, yeah, the Intercultural Center can hold an event, and any organization can hold an event, but unless you really have, like, a relationship with somebody, they don't have any accountability to come to that and be involved in that opportunity. So I think in expanding the opportunity of the incoming freshmen and the sophomores under us is making sure that as an BSA and, like, a representative body of, you know, our peers and students, that we make sure to, like, go to different people's stuff, because the people who want to be in your positions and see your positions, they're going to follow what you're doing. And so, yeah, that's kind of just going off of, like, what Dara was saying earlier, but definitely leading by example and reaching out to different organizations. I know that I came here and I had to go out of my comfort zone in a lot of ways, but it helped in the long run.
And I think that's if we could put themes on this year's essay, that's one of our main goals / themes. That's why we have the Vice President of Outreach. And Nate's going to be making some announcements after our discussion about different things that we're trying to go to every week. But if you have anything you think that we should be going to, please reach out to all of us. I'll send it over the listserv, and that goes to any person in the audience or anyone that wants to contact the Student Assembly. We have open microphones for a reason, and I really like to see them utilized, but we know it's a two-way street, and we need to come out to everyone's events as well and start the discussions as well. So thank you, Sasha. Hannah Geiser, you had a question?
Yes. I am the liaison for the Greek series to the SA, and so I know that you mentioned that you're doing a discussion regarding diversity in the Greek houses, and so I would love to work with you or be a part of your coalition building and willingness to see that diversity does continue within those houses and such, so you and I can get in contact through there as well.
She wrote your name down for me. Thank you, Hannah. Thank you very much.
So does anyone else, anyone in the room would like to speak? Otherwise, we'll go on to the rest of our agenda. All right, seeing that over, I think we can actually start the slow clap now. For I think that this was a really great discussion. We haven't had something quite like this in a really long time. So we really appreciate you coming. If you have anything that you'd like to talk to us about, our doors are always open 4:45 on Thursdays. And please send us anything you think we'd be interested in attending or talking about starting any of these groups. Send it over to me or anyone on the SA, and I'll be sure to send it over our listeners.
And I think that you guys are scheduled to meet here again.
Yeah,
I believe.
In March.
Okay.
March 9th.
Good. That is soon. And the house is open, okay? There are lots of meetings and activities that go on here. So the more you know about what goes on here, the more I think that you can be a part of what we're trying to do.
Great. Thanks, Renee.
Should I leave?
You can stay.
Yeah.
You have a great time. All right.
Great, by the way.
So next on our agenda is going back to the announcements and reports. The next one is from the Vice President of Outreach, Trefison, on outreach events.
Jump right to it. Hold on. As I'm emailing on that, we'll pull up the calendar. So as you all know, you have the calendar of events coming up this week. Right now, what we've got going on starting today, we've got Feminism Food for Thought, that is a dinner this evening in Flora Rose House.
It's weekly, right?
It's a weekly meeting, yeah. And let me just, sorry, I wasn't.
So maybe, Dara, you can organize a trip for us to all go down there.
Yeah, sure. They have different topics every week.
So this week's topic is drag discussion. And so just I'm going to go through the events of the week that people have brought to us and that we find important for all of you to be attending.
And this will happen every week from now on, so we can go through the week of events. So write down anything you think is interesting.
It'll all be sent to you in an email by the end of the meeting. So tomorrow and Friday is a Get Involved Consent Ed. I don't know if you guys have heard about the organization Consent Ed. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with it. Information about issues about sexual consent, bystander intervention, and sexual assault. If you want to learn more, 2 to 4 tomorrow in Willard Street lobby. Also on Friday is the Black Jew Dialogues, which is a Black History Month event that I think we are all very excited about hearing, especially as a Jew. it's a great showcase. It's a comedy. On the relationships between, I haven't read it fully yet, but I think it's going to be a very interesting performance that's happening at Ithaca College tomorrow at, come on, I'll get it for you.
8 p.m.
I'm going to be sending out a link on how to get transportation over there, and be sure to attend that because I think that'll be fun. Also tomorrow night, Shabbat 161 at 104 West at 6:30 p.m. President Gorton is going to be attending Shabbat dinner there, so that would be another great event to check out. On Sunday, we've got Drag Brunch, which is an idea that I actually brought to the Haven community. And I think it'd be a very interesting insight to see, to learn a little bit more about drag and also enjoy brunch as well. On Monday, we've got the Martin Luther King Jr. Commemorative Lecture from 7:30 to 8:30 in Sage Chapel. And the speaker is the fifth grandson of Mohandas Gandhi, and Arun Gandhi, and I think that would also be a great event to go to.
What time is it?
That is at 7:30 to 8:30 in Sage Chapel.
On Monday.
It's all on, already on your calendars, and you're getting an email, so don't freak out. continuing with the Black History Month dinner series, next Monday as well, they're having a dinner at Carl Becker House on West, and the theme will be Caribbean cuisine. And the last event I have for this week is an LGBTQ Asian American family dinner right here in this room, and it's a very it's one of the great initiatives that has been started in this building to bring together the different communities that are here. So I hope that we see you at all these events this week, and the event tracker will be going out tonight.
Yeah. So this semester we're doing Vice President of Outreach duties a bit differently. It's a new position starting this year, and we decided instead of just assembly members putting on their own events, it would be better use of our time and getting to know all different types of communities if we went to all the different events that were already put on by all facets of students here at Cornell. So that's why we're having these weekly updates. Please try to go at least one or two a month, something that's different, something outside of your comfort zone, so then we have things to talk about at our student assembly meetings and get different initiatives and resolutions on the table that you wouldn't quite come across in your everyday life. All right, next on the announcements and reports is Hannah Geiser with a Greek IFC update.
Yes, so I'm going to be serving as the liaison for the Greek community and for the SA, and I know many people on the board are already part of the Greek community as well, so that's great. So my idea is to just kind of increase the knowledge of what's going on in both communities and to report back to IFC, Panhellenic, and MGLC. I'm a member of the Panhellenic Executive Board, and so I bring the Panhellenic perspective, but I also work with the ISG members and my MGLC counterpart. But last night at the ISG President's meeting, they passed a policy to increase the sanctions for going against certain, for having an infraction against the rules, and it's called the 25-5 rule, in the sense that each house will be charged $20 per member if they are found with hard alcohol at one of the events, $5 per member if they are found having freshmen attend one of their events, and $5 per member if it is an unregistered event. And that passed.
Yeah, so this is just the ongoing changes to IFC, especially with the new recognition policy to make sure that IFC is in compliance with everything that's been changed over the last year or so. So if you have any questions about Greek issues, if you want to have more of an in-depth discussion, please talk to Hannah. Did you have a follow-up?
Just a question.
Sure.
Hannah, would you mind sharing with the room what the Greek community's policy is on medical amnesty so everyone knows and they can communicate as well?
That is, yes, definitely. So the Greek community's policy with medical amnesty is that if your organization calls from the location where a student got sick or needs to be transported from, that house and that organization will be completely protected from any of the rules. But, for example, if an incident took place at a house and then that student was driven in a car to a facility in College Town in an effort maybe to cover up the scene, and they were called from that venue in College Town, then that the medical amnesty rule would not apply to the organization, but the New York State Good Samaritan law would cover the individuals that called.
I think what I wanted to point out with that was just wherever you are, if you were at a fraternity or a fraternity facility off campus and one of your friends gets sick, please don't be afraid and go seek help, Greek or not Greek, a member of that house or not. Mm-hmm. They won't get in trouble if they have to help you. So don't feel shy and please communicate that to everyone. I know they've communicated a lot within the Greek community, but it's maybe something, it's good for everyone to know that, Greek or not.
Great. Thanks. And we'll talk about that more once more Kegugas Watchers and Medical Amnesty things come down the pipe with John Mueller and Adam Gitlin. So that's going to be a big discussion for this semester as well.
In 10 minutes, actually.
Okay, yes, in 10 minutes. You're right, Resolution 36. All right, next on the announcements and reports, Representative Yatarian is talking about the University Assembly meeting.
Yeah, it was the yesterday. I was replaced there in the Faculty Senate. And basically the main point of discussion was the New York City Tech Campus. And it was just really interesting to get their perspective, like the faculty's perspective on everything that's been going on. And I think the most two most important things I took from it were the faculty concerns. And their two big concerns were that the funding aspect, the funding that the Ithaca campus gets was going to be too heavily concentrated in New York City, and that the faculty, when we were recruiting people, teachers wouldn't want to come here, but rather go to New York City. So they're basically afraid and concerned that the quality of the Ithaca campus was going to go down because of the new campus in New York City. And the provost spoke to the funding issue a little more clearly than he did the faculty issue, but he basically said that money will never be taken from the Ithaca campus to the city campus. It will only be the other way around, so that the New York City campus will actually be giving money to our campus, the Ithaca. And yeah, that was basically what the main points of discussion were about.
Great. Do you have a question?
Yeah, how do they respond to the issue with the faculty preferring to work in New York City as opposed to the...
They kind of danced around the issue a little bit, just saying that he didn't believe that would happen, that because the New York City tech campus was now ours, that basically it would improve our view of Cornell around the world, and more faculty would actually want to come here and not there. So his opinion on the matter, didn't really have any more concrete things to say about them.
Great, thanks for the update. And for everyone that's going to these meetings, because I know we all go to meetings like this all the time, please email Adam when you're going to attend this meeting and say you're going to make an announcement, because we obviously have a lot more announcements than just the one on the agenda. So please do this ahead of time. We really love to hear updates like that. So just let us know, because that's what we want to use this meeting time for. Next on the announcements and reports is Representative Hoffman and Representative Ballack with a CALS update. Health outreach update.
Yes, so last semester we held our outreach event. It was an apple cider event we held with the Undergraduate Dyson Council in the MIM library. The response was very good. We got a lot of great suggestions, and tomorrow we're going to meet with the dean, so hopefully we can provide her with some suggestions on what the students think.
Great. And if you can update us on your dean's meeting next week, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll provide an update on what happened there.
Great. Next on the agenda is Representative Scalfo.
Hi, everybody. I'm giving an update from the Codes and Judicial Committee from the UA. Tomorrow we have probably our most important meeting, so if you'd like to come, it's tomorrow at 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. in Day Hall B12. There we will be approving a proposal by one of the faculty to amend the judicial administrator for sexual harassment cases. It's very important. I've been working pretty closely with Gina Drago and the Women's Resource Center to make sure that the students' voices are heard with the changes. And I've also been working with Mary Beth, the judicial administrator, to make sure that these changes are properly done, protecting the students as much as possible. So if you guys would like to come tomorrow, it's 4 p.m. B12 Day Hall. Just very important, and I'll be on the agenda next week with an update from what gets approved.
Great, thank you. Next announcement is Representative Brown.
Hi guys, I just wanted to let you know that Women's Issues is having their first meeting Sunday in the Carillon at 1 p.m. We'll probably be discussing the amendment made to this resolution and what issues in the semester. Some of them will include the forcible touching incident, chasing that special assault, and we have a couple of speakers and events for the semester, so if you're interested in helping out with some of the issues, please join me or email me.
Great, thanks. Next, an update about elections from Director of Elections, Jabrett.
Hi, guys. Glad to see some new faces in the room of people that are going to be running in this upcoming election. But this update's also for you guys at the table who are running for re-election. Just wanted to remind all of you that this next Monday, February the 20th, all the elections material is due. So that includes online submitting your candidate personal statement and then bringing in, you have to print out from our website at cornellsa.com the checklist and eligibility form as well as the candidate petition form, which is, as you guys know, all the signatures that you need. So I just wanted to keep you updated on that being due the 20th.
Adam? Campaigning doesn't start until after the 20th, right?
Right, absolutely. There's no campaigning until after. It's actually the 22nd. We have a mandatory campaign meeting. That's that Wednesday. So after that is when campaigning will start. Right now, all you should be doing is getting your signatures for the petition.
Yeah, and you will get disqualified if we hear that you're setting up meetings with the intention of running for re-election. That's not within the rules. No campaigning whatsoever.
Yeah. So as far as what campaigning means, campaigning is literally anything aside from getting signatures on the sheet. You cannot put any posters up, no buying of Facebook ads, no literally anything besides getting the signatures.
All right. And last announcement is from Vice President of Public Relations, Gurjani.
So good to see you guys all have these updates, and good to see you sharing with us. I just ask that you log on to our website and share it with the rest of Cornell as well. So please, all of you that spoke, write a blog post and put it up. Let's try to get one every 2 weeks as a rule of thumb. You guys do enough things that if you post once every 2 weeks, we'll have a lot more content on our website.
Can I add on to that?
Yeah.
And it's not only posting to our blog. One of the recently, John Mueller wrote a blog post, and some reporters actually ended up picking it up twice because of his blog post. So it's not only people reading that, but it also spreads even more because the Sun picks up on it.
So live the dream, try to post,
and
get
other campus media outlets.
Okay, great. We're going to move on to business of the day. Resolution 36, medical amnesty decal distribution by Representative Mueller and Executive Vice President Gitlin.
Well, hello everyone, and hello to all our listeners on WBBR and CornellRadio.com. I think you Adam Pell presented this pretty well last week, but the idea of this here is that you all know about the Medical Amnesty Decals that I've been working on with Adam and with the Connect crew, and really, particularly because I got very sick at the end of last semester and I've been trying to make up my finals throughout the beginning of this one, it was tough to get the distribution effort going at the beginning of the semester like we had hoped, and really this is just our official pledge to, as a student assembly, come together and make sure that we get these decals going and make sure that we can get a distribution team together and make them actually end up on people's doors and refrigerators and mirrors and all throughout college stuff. That's pretty much it. Anybody has any questions?
Also, a cool thing is that the IFC unanimously passed a nearly identical resolution last night. And it's the first time that the IFC and the Greek community in general, and the SA, from what I'm aware of, has collaborated in this way. So that's sort of a very cool part of the whole outreach sort of initiative that Nate and other people have been working on.
To specify, the IFC resolution states that Greek chapters will require each of their annexes, official or unofficial, basically anywhere that they have members living in College Town, they will be putting up the decals in those houses, on the door, inside, and mirrors, and things like that. And and that's a good way to get started. You know, that's a huge chunk of community, large part of college town, so get the ball rolling.
Great. So we looked at this resolution last week. It was on new business, so now it's business of the day. That means we can have a healthy discussion about it, and then we can also vote on it today. So first on the speakers list is Representative Gitlin. And anyone in the audience that also wants to vote on this, feel free, not vote, but ask questions, voice your opinions would be great.
Also the details on the back of the page, if anyone wants to take it.
So I'm just going to speak very quickly. I think we've been looking at this type of resolution since the beginning of last semester. I think it's fairly important. We have the details, they have the details ready to go. And I think it's very important to talk more about it and what we can do besides the details, but I think it's fairly obvious that we're going to just pass this, so I'll call the question.
Before we call the question, I just would like to just have a bit more discussion on it. I know there's a lot of positive energy, but maybe we can talk this out before we vote on it. So next on the speakers list is Vice President of Finance Nicoletti.
Two things, just maybe I forgot the decals. Are they stick on? Are they magnet for fridges? What are these again?
As a matter of fact, our very young meeting, Brett here has one that you can just pass around. We had Challenge Industries, which is a group that employs mentally challenged and developmentally challenged people to come in and they, it's like a work day for them, and they do tasks like that for different groups. And they stuck those all together, made nice little packages for us. So that is what people are getting, and the stickers themselves are actual like stickers.
Okay. So and they won't damage any. Like where would people normally stick them? Like
on glass is what they really should be. I have my front door, it's a big pane of glass. And I have it in the bottom left corner.
As long as my landlord won't get angry at me.
Yeah, I'll and the landlords also. That's another piece of this is that basically every landlord in College Town has heard about this and has taken a large stack from the landlord's meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago. Again, I wasn't able to make that meeting, but Adam was there and said that pretty much every landlord in the room took a big stack. And so the third facet of distribution will be landlords handing them out. And really there's no harm in residences getting multiple decals. You know, like I said, I think they can be on refrigerators, on bathroom mirrors, on the front door into the house. The more you see it, the more exposure you get.
And the second thing is what body on the SA is going to coordinate marketing? Is that ComCom or?
Yeah.
Okay.
It hasn't been discussed yet, but it can be outreach and ComCom, and we can combine two task forces together to get the word out.
It's not relevant to passing the resolution, but...
Once it passes, we'll make sure it happens.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Next on the speakers list is Representative Muir.
I was actually going to ask about the landlords, but also, you said that you're going to know the IFC requiring all the college town annexes. Is that more of a request, or how are you going to go about enforcing that requirement?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's not our job to go and police what the IFC passes in their own resolution. That would be the responsibility of their board and their presidents having unanimously passed it. I would assume that. And you know, I my opinion on this whole thing is that the most help we can get is positive no matter what. And you know, if not every house goes and puts them up, that's okay. I'm not trying to.
But is that more of like an issue with the landlord or with the IFC system?
I think that landlords are fully behind this. It's a positive message that they are also behind because they don't want students getting sick or having problems in their own residences, in the residences that they own.
Right.
You know, it's really a nice example of these universities working with landlords, working with the degree system. It's like this nice conglomeration of a bunch of different people moving towards a positive.
And we have invited a couple of landlords to come speak at an SA meeting in March.
Awesome. Yeah.
So
you can ask those questions.
Yeah.
Next on the speakers list is Representative Miller.
Representative Mueller. I was wondering.
It'll be on your.
Have you considered or is there a plan to make larger decals for more prominent persons?
That is a fantastic question.
Like satellite, which you really have things like that.
Yeah, so that's a great question. There are a couple of things like that have already gotten started. Jennifer Austin, who is the graphics wizard in Gannett Health Services, she has already designed, and we have up currently in TCAP buses, the ads that you see above the seats that are a larger scale version of the decal with a lot of the same information that's on the sheet that's coming around the room now. In addition to that, she has been working up larger scale details with a little bit more information that can go in those, you know, in College Town, the trash cans that have places for art that you can put inside of them. For that, for in larger College Town businesses, and those same larger poster size details, so to speak, art would be easily adaptable inside inside fraternity houses, you know, at a bar or in the space where they typically have parties.
Can I follow up a question? Also, is it possible to, I know that satellite houses are required to have these details posted. Is it possible to have them, you know, required to have posters or large ones? I feel that, you know, perhaps satellite houses are places where it's necessary to have more prominent posters.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right.
What was the question?
He said, he asked if he could, if there are plans for larger, if asking people to also put larger poster size, essentially, in the satellite houses. And I think that we really want to kind of wait and see how well it is enforced, but they are going, the stickers themselves are going in, and I think once we get the larger scale designs out, then we can work on another IFC resolution and try to get that going in conjunction.
All right, next on the speakers list is Representative Yukarian.
Hi, so obviously, like, I'm all for this. That I actually, partially my question is answered. I'm just wondering, like, what other efforts we're doing to advertise this, because I know I showed this idea to several people, and they didn't really understand that, like, there was literally no consequences for calling. And I obviously, like, you can't fit all that into a sticker. But I was just wondering what other efforts and kind of what's on that larger poster that we put up.
Yeah, that's a great question, too. Really, you touched on exactly what our issues are in that we can't put all the information on the sticker, and a lot of times people will look at it and not really know exactly what the true message is necessarily. The hope is that the sheet that's attached to the sticker itself really goes through and explains that the laws are changing, the criminal code, all the stuff that I kind of talked about over the last several months since we started with this is all on that sheet and all pretty it is all inclusive there. So people who, tenants who do get the sheet will be able to read that and hopefully understand it a little bit better. But, you know, I think there's something to be said for, you know, we're a group of people who now really, really understand this. I certainly feel like a broken record. I think you all really understand it now. And by sending those letters out, even if a few people read them, then more people know the message, more people understand it. And somebody says, hey, what are these stickers that are all over? Somebody hopefully can answer the question and be well educated about it from the pamphlets that we're sending, or from the sheets that we're sending out with the
Can I
ask you
a follow-up?
Yeah.
So, is there any effort to kind of target the door campus, like maybe mailboxes or you know, in residence halls or something in the dining halls to tell people a little bit more about
it? Yeah, it's a great idea. I mean, you bring up the point that a lot of times what you end up with, I think Mohit's waving his hand, that's a good idea for later. Is that what you're saying?
I can answer that.
Sure.
So, good point. We're expecting to put quarter cards in that, so that, you know, advertise our website into all the North campus and North campus mailboxes. What I can do is just staple one of the decals when I have one of those. You guys can come and staple them.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think you touched on a good point that a lot of the people who end up in College Town, a lot of times the people who need the amnesty calls are the people, the freshmen, the younger ones on North, and if they can understand it before they even get to the residence, that would be a really positive change as well. So,
can I make a suggestion before we move on? Maybe in the next generation of these decals to have one of those things that you can scan with your smartphones that goes to a more in-depth analysis of the medical amnesty.
Those are
just
a lot less, though, than people expect.
Just a suggestion. Next on the speakers list is Mohit Chow.
Mohit Chow,
sorry.
I'm curious. Let's say someone uses an app and uncovers a frat party. With the recent 25-5 rule, would they be affected by that?
I might call in Hannah's help on this, but from what I understand from the way the medical amnesty protocol is formulated for Greek houses, the answer to that is no. It would be... Mohit, go ahead.
Yeah, it depends on who calls. If it's journey calls, then no. If the individual calls, probably.
Hannah, do you have anything else you want to add?
I think that's what I was saying.
Okay.
Could you repeat that?
If the fraternity calls, so if you're at a frat and your friend is sick, and you say, all right, so monitor finds you, the president finds you and says, all right, he needs to go to the hospital, or she needs to go to the hospital, and he calls, the fraternity will face our consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But if you call and not the fraternity president, or, you know, if you call independent of the fraternity president, like he doesn't even know you called, then they probably face the sanction. The idea behind the MAP when it was instituted last year was giving fraternities or fraternity, the leadership of the fraternity, the avenue to act, the option to make the right choice at every step of the way. And basically, if you make the right choice, you're exonerated. So that's the thing, that's the reasoning behind these rules. And the 25-5 is like an addition to that.
What if it was my friend and I just didn't go, and I didn't know that I'm a part of the Greek system, and I just picked up my own phone and...
So call and then find someone because it's someone else's house, right? You can call first, but then, as long as the attorney cooperates.
I don't want to muddle the point that these medical amnesty decals are primarily for private college town residences. The fact that a lot of college town residences happen to put annexes or satellite houses is just we want people to know that in those situations they can still call for help and see them in those places, so that when they leave and they're walking down the street later and their friend classes because they're too drunk, they know that they can call for help in the middle of anywhere in college town and not face an underage drinking charge or selling them alcohol to minors sort of thing. That's really the true point of this resolution.
Next on the speakers list is Representative Wolfert.
I was just wondering if you've reached out to like the dorms on campus or sorority houses as well, because a lot of like sorority girls come home like intoxicated, like fraternities and same with freshmen. And I know there's details on the door of the bathroom are like really, really outdated, and there's probably information pending on it. So when you do it all, like how can you work it all, or like can't help?
So as far as residential programs, we have reached out to Joe Berg and to other people in dorms. It's slightly more complicated with dorms because there's actually an on-campus medical amnesty protocol, which isn't exactly the same as the New York State protocol. One thing about that is they are starting to review that to potential. I don't want to speak for the JA or the administration, but they are starting to review that to maybe make it more lax. Regarding sororities and Panhell, we are reaching out to Panhell. I believe some sororities have already been reached out to. I think Theta has been, and I'm sure it's going to continue.
But that is, just quickly, that's exactly what you said. I think that this is definitely an area that we can be an avenue of communication and promoting these things and getting it, like, consistent information out there, especially about what last year is.
Next on the speakers list is Representative Brown.
Okay. I think that this is a great idea. I would suggest possibly adding another resolution to follow it up, just for promotional aspects. I know that I'm very passionate about this issue. I've put the new narrative to all and advocated for it. All the students know about it and it's very strong. I don't know how to speak. I feel like there's a lot of kids who are awesome and really have experienced that on campus for some years.
Could you just reiterate what she just said?
Yeah, sorry. I think that you should follow this up with another resolution to write an email, because you have
Yeah, you don't need to do that through resolution. You can just send it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And just so people know, that the off-campus housing office sent out a really great email to everyone who, according to their records, lives off-campus, including college students on campus, had a copy of the one-pager there and as well as the actual detail itself. I don't know how many people thoroughly read those emails, and of course that's something we struggle with. With any email that you try to send to people that you don't know intimately, so that those avenues have been. There's lots of different ways that we've been coming at this, but I really do appreciate a lot of the new ideas that we've heard.
Yeah, Representative Goldberg.
Oh, well, I'll just make this real quick. Maybe this is more related to IFC and not this, but I'm just thinking about what Mohit said. I know if I go to a frat party you say if my friend gets sick, just hear out some attacks and tell them about it, and maybe this is something included in the packet. I mean, the frat parties I've been to usually are a little bigger and wilder than a party in College Town, and I know if my friend got sick, I don't think my first thought would be find a brother and tell him about it. So, and I'm not the kind of guy that would want to get a frat in trouble either. So I would be told I'd be happy to go get a brother. I just thought maybe you should think about while you guys are on the room.
Lohit, if you want.
I can clarify that. So, say you're at a party and you're sick, your friend is sick. So you say, all right, he's sick, he looks like he's dying, I'm going to call 911. First of all, chances are, if you're at a party, a brother will see it and alert the president because you're all concerned. If not, once you call 911, you know, even if 911's at the door, if the fraternity just says, all right, cops are here, they're saying, you know, they're coming with an ambulance and a stretcher, everyone out, and if they clear a path, that's good enough. All the fraternity has to do is show that they acted responsibly.
I just want to reiterate that the issue that we keep talking about with the Greek houses literally has nothing to do with this resolution because it's a completely different, policy, and we're talking strictly about off-campus houses right now.
And another call to question at that point.
Okay, there's been a call to question in multiple seconds. Is there any dissent? All right, seeing none, we're going to vote by placard. Actually, we need a roll call this. I cannot see down the line enough to be able to do placards. So will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
He proxies, yes.
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 By a vote of 22-0-0, SA resolution number 36 passes. Congratulations. All right. Last resolution, SA resolution number 38 by Representatives Gitlin and Pinkney. Quick question before you guys begin. Did this go to a committee?
No,
of course. Okay, great. So we can't vote on this today because it didn't go through committee anyway, so please don't try to move it to business of the day, but we can definitely ask questions on the resolution.
Don't
even speak on it now? Yeah, please present the resolution. You have 2 minutes.
Okay, so basically this resolution came from an idea that Ross presented to the Pinkney Committee, and basically it does exactly what the name says, to never walk alone. So it's an app which essentially students who are in the library at late hours at night can find another student who's in the same area to walk home with, which would help ensure their safety.
Yeah, look, I also just want to frame this. It was something that I just thought of in the spur of the moment, and I'm not a technological person whatsoever, so I don't even know how possible it is or whether CIT can actually do it. But we thought that if it is possible, for example, the reason it popped into my head was because of Facebook Places, I guess, because you can log into different places. I thought maybe you can log into different libraries and say where you want to go, and maybe you can get a group of two or three to walk home with you, so because like when you're in a group, it's safer, it's stronger. Yeah, there is. I think was that in this resolution? Was that? Was, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, there's a safety number. That's the word. And we thought maybe if it's possible, it could be something very good.
All right. First on the speakers list is Trustee Boris.
So I think this is a
great idea and it's going in the right direction. I have two questions. The first you kind of dealt with. The first is like who'd be designing it, but I guess you're reaching out to CIC.
We're going to try and get moving on that.
Okay. And the second one might not be one you have an answer to now, but just keep in mind, how does the you stop this from becoming an easy way to track students who are alone, who are afraid from walking home?
Right. So that was the first thing that came up when I first brought it up was, how do you know that if you log in to Olin Library that some other student, like we don't know that every student is, I don't know what the word
a student.
What?
No.
You have to log in with your net ID. With your net ID. But, like, who knows? You could get, I'm not doubting students, but, like, you could get mugged by a student or something.
Okay.
There's a chance that won't happen. There's going to be more than one student. Are you
going to
meet up with
the
group? So.
Yeah, I think because we were trying to figure out ways to deal with that issue. We thought maybe it would be very useful during studies when people have a lot of, especially, like, freshmen and like that's how I can relate. Like if you're saying it's open until like 3 a.m. I don't know, is it open until 3 a.m? Okay.
So the way the assembly works, I think that this might be a bit backwards of doing this, but thank you for bringing this to our attention. We can't vote on this right now just because the idea doesn't exist. We don't even have an infrastructure to do it. Normally a resolution is like the last step. You present it, you have this all ready to go, and we want to push it out to everyone. But I think it is an interesting idea that we should talk about. So let's move this actually to the safety task force. Ashley, Ross, let's put you two on the heads. I suggest you guys meeting with CUPD. They're really interested in doing things like that, talking to the Blue Light Escort Service. I can help you set up a meeting with Cassidy Zoner on this issue. Once you get the technology and a couple steps in the way, that can be a next step. And let's get the task force working on this. So Anisha set up some meetings with the task force to get people around
so
this issue.
Before we have it, do you guys, just to get an overall sense, do you think this is a good idea? You think it's just like even feasible or realistic? That's kind of what we were trying to know more about in this.
I think that you should try to see if this is even feasible to do before you get the sense of the SA's approval or disapproval of it. I think it's an interesting idea, and if you can make it happen, definitely by all means make it happen. But it sounds like you might be running into a couple kinks in the road before you can even come to resolution form. Did you have something? No.
I'll move to table it indefinitely.
Yeah, so we're going to table the resolution indefinitely. Hopefully we can see this come to a head at the end of the semester. But overall, a great idea, and I'm looking forward to the safety task force to work on this. So with that being said, that's the end of our agenda. This week's meeting, February 9th, 2012, is officially finished. So thanks, guys.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.